What did he start to do? He started to slow down. He started to he didn't sign on to more challenging tasks. I think Dr. Wish and I'll take this up again on Wednesday.
I think that'd be great. Wednesday. So by the way, we're listening to the Are You Crazy show, Health and Wellness Wednesday, on the Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio Station, broadcasting here from Shepherdstown, West Virginia, above the Four Seasons Bookstore, right in the middle of German Street, the middle of Shepherdstown. Here we are. And so welcome this morning, Dr. Zaki McGill. We're later going to have a call from Renata Poor, an actually frequent guest to our station here, and been very active over the years in West Virginia
for affordable
health care, but she's also performed administrative jobs in the state, as well as she's related to the West Virginia policy. VPPP, I always get their name, Budget and Policy Priorities. West Virginia Budget and Policy Priorities, which is affiliated to the National Budget and Policy Priorities outfit, for which our favorite economist is attached, and that would be Jared Bernstein. He's great, by the way. He's just he's the cat's meow man on the economic. And he's so decent. He doesn't do the Krugman thing of trying to prove you're an idiot. He doesn't have the posture is friendly.
Okay. And what's his name again?
Jared Bernstein. He was
Jared Bernstein.
He was Vice President Biden's chief economist.
Okay.
And he works with West Virginia Budget and Policy. He's a very good economist. He has a very solid reputation. He knows how to work the numbers. He's technically good, but he just writes progressive stuff in a way that is really, frankly, free from dogma. Left wing or right wing, and it's refreshing. You know, you read him, and even people that you normally might argue with, I get a little kind of a fuzzy feeling with him.
Wow!
Am I right about that, Stuart?
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, Stuart.
And what made you think of him?
Because he's related to Renata Poor. They work for the same organization.
Oh, they work for the same. Oh, yes. He's working for West Virginia for Affordable Health Care.
No, Renata wears a number of hats. She's also on the board of West Virginia for Budget and Policy Priority, which is a research organization and lobbying organization for, I would say, progressive-oriented economic policy, the budget. Ted Bettner, right? He's the actual chief analyst for West Virginia West Virginia Budget and Policy Priorities. But she's on the board, okay? And also, I think she worked with Garrett Moran, one of our friends for years in the Mental Health Administration in the state. Garrett was actually the head of it for a while. And she was working with him so way back. I mean, we're talking about 25 years ago, I believe. So she's very experienced about all these issues, and she knows the state, and she knows the
Yeah, I've been on a couple conference calls with Renata over the past couple weeks, trying to organize this town hall in Martinsburg in April. And Garrett's on there too. And
I'm glad he's helping out. That's great.
I'll say this about Renata: if I ever needed a power of attorney, I'd want her to be. you talk about smart, clear, concise,
right.
You know, professional.
Right.
I mean, just, yeah.
She's got it down, so I'm looking forward to talking to her. But anyway, she's working for an organization that is frankly doing great things, and affiliated national. That's why I mentioned Jared. He's just, he was on a movie we saw last night. Stuart and I went up to Fanny's little, what's the name of the series they're doing?
Fanny Crawford.
Great Discussions.
Yeah. Fanny Crawford, the storytelling.
Yeah, so the Foreign Policy Association of America has for years now, at least 20 years, they've been doing these things where every year they sponsor a national discussion. Mm-hmm. And they put together media or a paper with some heavy hitters, okay, on it. opening. What's the essence of this question? And last night's discussion was on trade, and so the local League of Women Voters and a few of the, looks like the Unitarian Universalist crowd, were, they worked together up there on a number of things in Hagerstown together, and so they sponsored mm-hmm. this little discussion on trade. And of course, there's not anybody more opinionated about trade running around than, you know, our good friend Stuart here. So, and it's always nice to attach a national name to a nice little local discussion. So there, and plus, you know, it's very fortunate for Fanny that she's married, you know, since her admirers are, you know, spreading far and wide around.
Mm.
Yeah. So
yeah, Fanny's cute, isn't she?
I told her picture on her website makes her look like it was taken like one of those old pictures they had of very very colorful and lively people that were used to be on the front of every issue of Soviet Life.
Whoa, okay. I'm trying to get a visual on that.
Oh, you didn't? That's because you didn't used to see covers of Soviet Life. It made Life magazine look crappy, actually.
Really?
Oh, wow. They would just have beautiful people photographed as their main thing. And I think the French, the French version of Life magazine. It was the Russian version of Life magazine, right? And but there was a German and it's a German one too, right? But they and they take pictures of their people.
Right.
I mean, that's the big deal, right?
Their models.
Yeah.
Right.
Not just models, but.
I get you.
So we went up there last night, and we watched this film, and Jared was one of the featured speakers, too, so in the film about trade. The subject was trade.
Okay. So what was the pearl? Give us the pearls from the film.
Oh, well, they did a pretty good job of clipping several sides of the issue. They had a guy from the Cato Institute on there who, of course, will never say a word that bad about free trade. Under any circumstances, mm-hmm. All the problems with free trade are problems with other people, not free trade. Mm. That's their position.
Okay.
And then you have Jared, who is again works for National Budget and Policy Priorities, and was Vice President Biden's chief of economist. And he's he's very labor oriented, but he's not owned by the labor movement as a couple of other economists are, and who, you know, everybody that works for the labor movement works for an army. Mm. if they don't, they find out at some point that they do. Okay, they don't think so. They find out that they do, and they don't actually have quite the same freedom of research and opinion that some would think. But Jared's like the solid guy, and he's not factional, and he puts out the best solid information you can about trade. And he takes the right position. The problem is not that trade advances growth, because it does, but for who?
Right.
And if you can solve the problem in your country, for who? That's the one thing you can control. Okay. I mean, you have the political power, if you choose to exercise it, to control who gets the gains from trade. If your country gets richer because of trade, who gets richer? Okay, I mean, does everybody get a little bit richer, or just a few?
Right.
And as long as the main effect of trade, in manufacturing, is to wipe out the labor movement, and to wipe out employment overall too. I mean, it's like, a third of what it used to be, even in 1970. So,
what's a third?
Manufacturing employment.
Oh, okay.
Although we're producing just as much.
Okay.
Or even more, right? It's not like production has actually gone down. It's actually gone up, but the employment has gone way down. So as a result of automation, trade is a factor. I mean, there's a lot of the iPhones are being made in China, pretty much exclusively. I think they're, mm-hmm. I think almost all of them are made there. Mm-hmm. And they're not made here. Now, if they were made here, they'd have to probably even more automate the process than it is in China. And I understand it's fairly capital intensive, even in China. But they still, because labor is so cheap, they have been. Mm. I mean, as long as labor is really cheap and you can make them work 12 hours.
Right.
Right. You can, you don't have to automate. But once you have to pay them more.
And the product is not cheap. I mean.
No.
you know, these products, these iPhones, you know, I mean, new, you know, they're
close. $400 or $500?
No, more than that. $5,000 to $1,000, depending upon the model you get.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not cheap. And so, yeah, it always, the question always arises in my mind, who all is buying these things? And then I think about all the rich Middle Easterners.
Well, they sell through plans, right? No, you can get them cheaper. You don't have to pay the $1,000 if you get it through a sponsored plan, right?
Right, right. If you sign on to a monthly contract, you can pay it as you go, kind of thing.
Well, you sure will,
yeah,
too.
Well, that's true. Yeah, you do.
But, you know, both Carol and I, we got rid of the contracts. There's always some loophole in them. We didn't realize that texting on Ben's phone, my son, who was on, we were all on the same plan for a while. Okay, mm-hmm. We didn't realize that texting in Canada for him was not actually covered in the regular thing.
No,
and we got
no transnation.
We got a $500 bill.
Yikes, that hurts.
So I'm asking, what happened here?
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that, because I just helped an elderly friend of mine. I was over their house, and they were complaining that their phone bill, their internet through AT&T, had jumped up from about $50 a month. After they talked them into some kind of upgrade, they were paying like $200 a month. And of course, because I've been in this for decades, seeing, you know, the changes in the contracts and you know, I had a pretty good clue, idea what might be happening, right? Now, this elderly friend, you know, who's 70, 75 plus, was convinced that it had something to do with they talked them into this upgrade, you know, machine.
Yeah, and that right.
Had, well, as it turned out, you know, when I went to the bill and I looked at it and I saw the overage charges for the gigabytes, I said, "Here's your here's $150 of your bill in overage charges. Why didn't anybody there ever contact you about you're routinely going over your 8 gigabytes, 4 8 gigabytes, whatever it is, a month to upgrade to another plan?" So I called them, and well, it turns out they had, but they've been sending the messages as text, and they weren't reading the messages. So, you know, so at any rate, I'm still going to follow up, and I told the girl to have a supervisor call us, because I want to explain the situation and see if they would kick back some of that from like 6-7 months of, you know, these overage charges. But you know, it's the learning curve with these things, you know? I mean, that's what it made me aware of. Now, you're talking about the texting. Yeah, I guess because I travel internationally a lot, I know that ain't covered.
Well, he wasn't covered for Canada, okay? It happened when he was in Canada visiting his sister, right?
Gotcha,
okay.
Right.
And so he was just texting all the time.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, he was getting bumped a dollar every, I don't know, something.
Yeah. I looked into what it would cost if I had a plan while I was in Cuba, and it was like $1.35 per text, you know? Uh-huh. I mean, yeah, it could add up quickly. But I have Credo, John. I have philanthropic carrier.
They are philanthropic, but they're a front for AT&T, is this so you know?
I thought they were front for Sprint.
I thought they used all of AT&T's backbone.
No, it's according to my, it said
really?
Sprint. Okay. They're through the Sprint line, but I'll check into that.
Check into that.
But anyway,
I heard,
you know, it's not it, monthly. You get to vote for one of three organizations to get all this money.
Yeah.
So, even though I'm paying monthly, I'm going to be paying somebody. So might as well be contributing.
I just use GoPhones. You know,
GoPhones.
Well, okay. You only get a monthly bill. You know, you pay $40 a month, and I get unlimited everything except I get Canada, but I don't get rest of the world.
Okay.
So, because I'm not traveling anymore that much, so
Yeah.
And I don't want to, actually, either. I've discovered that my desire to travel has nearly evaporated.
That happens, yeah. You know, that happens. You get road weary, right?
Yeah.
You want to stay put a while. I think that's...
Although, I see all kinds of people, talking about moving to Canada. I don't think there's...
Including my brother.
They're going to have a hard time getting in up there, boy.
Yeah, my middle brother, he wants to move to Canada. He keeps talking about it. Vancouver, Montreal. Yeah.
Vancouver.
Right. And then my baby sister, to lighten our mood in this text stream, sends a picture of Justin Trudeau's butt. He's standing in giving some speech in these tight pants, and she says, "Well, on a lighter note, here's Justin Trudeau's butt."
Yeah.
I said, "Yeah, he's young and he boxes, okay?"
Right. Well, that's good. I mean, boxing's probably as good a preparation for politics as some other sports. So,
well, you know, in his career, one of his challengers or detractors, he challenged to a boxing match. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. You didn't hear this story? Yeah, I think it was either an opponent or that he was running against, or somebody just in the public or press who was giving him, a lot of disparaging comments. So he challenged him to a boxing match. And the guy accepted, and he knocked him out.
Who, Justin did?
Yeah. Yeah. Canada's got a kick butt prime minister.
Well, they're going to need one.
We can hope.
They're going to need one.
One day again.
Now, as Stuart and I were running down night before last the list of possible countries that Trump will invade, and what the most likely one would be, since he has to start a war almost, or he's done. He won't make it. If he doesn't start a war, he's going to be finished. But a war will give him an excuse to straitjacket, do all these threats he's doing, shut everybody up.
Right.
Anyway, we were thinking at first Yemen.
Yemen, really?
Because it might be easy, right? Right. Militarily, anyway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Of course, politically, the U.S. has a record of almost 0-0, in setting up stable governments afterwards. But
right.
I guess making peace with Japan was the last one that worked. But where were we going on this?
Mexico.
Oh, Mexico. Why not invade Mexico?
I think the pushback in the country would be just so strong.
Really? I mean, he says, look, they won't let me build a wall. Okay, I'm going to go down and take it over, and I'm gonna make them pay to be able to build a wall.
I don't think that could fly.
And now the reason why I say this is because we have a good friend, mm-hmm, who was in military intelligence.
Okay.
And she never said much of anything about, what military intelligence was supposed to be saying. Okay, she was an honorable officer in the United States Navy.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came up about Mexico and the, she said, well, there are some who say that the northern Mexican provinces are signs of a failed state.
Okay.
In the military. And they're worried about a failed state on the border.
Mm.
All right, so I just, I just let you. I'm just adding.
I hear you. You're like an occupying force.
Well,
under the excuse of stabilizing.
Yes, immigration, and these drug gangs, cartels, the corrupt military, the corrupt police, who appear to have been part of the murder of those students, or at least complicit at some level. And you have, why not do something big, and that can burn up all this anti-immigrant feeling at the same time, right? Because now, if you go into Yemen, who gives a crap about Yemen? I mean, in Texas, for example, or we were just playing Alabama on the radio, the great country band. I don't care about they got crappy politics, but I used to like their music. Carol and I went to see him twice in Portland, actually, once.
Well, what Middle Eastern countries would push back from?
Well, you can't do Syria because they've already given Syria to Russia. I mean, Putin's, Trump's already done that. It's over.
Yeah.
All right. And he's not going to go into Iran. It's too big, too powerful.
Right.
And,
right.
Even though he could sure, you know, go to bed with Saudi Arabia while he was doing that, because Saudi Arabia's dying for someone to bomb the hell. And so is Israel. So is Netanyahu. They're dying for someone to start bombing Iran. That's what they want. Well, when are you going to start bombing Iran? You know, that's all Netanyahu's been saying to the president for the past four. Of course, Obama said never. I'm not going to do it, right?
Right.
And now you got, who knows what Orange Man's going to do, right? But I'm guessing, though, politically for him, conquering Mexico works. There you go. That's my fable, my Aesop's fable for this morning.
Well, you were one of the early ones that warned us about a Rump victory, weren't you?
Yeah, but I predicted in the beginning. My record is not good. All right, it really isn't. I mean, I thought that Trump was a joke. Okay, I thought Hillary would win it for a while before the email, before the stupid FBI thing. I thought she was going to win it by 10 points. And then I said, well, maybe she'll win by 4 or 5 points, and then she loses it.
Yeah.
And so that's that. I have a very crappy record on, you know, the presidential prediction. So call me Ishmael. That's all.
Okay, but she did. Technically, she didn't lose it, right? Percentage wise.
No, technically she did.
No,
really she didn't.
Well, you were talking percentage points, 10, 5. So she ultimately won the popular vote by what, 1%?
What is 3 million? Is it 3 million votes? 2.5 million votes?
Closer to 3 million out of what, 60?
Is that how many? Is that roughly how many voted? 60 million.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's 5%.
There you go.
Was
that 60 million total votes?
60 something.
Yeah, 60 something total. Okay. So anyway. Just splitting hairs with you.
I know. Right. Well, one of the problems with splitting hairs is that you then can come convinced that there's an infinite amount of splitting that can be done. And once you can, once you get seduced into thinking that the amount of splitting is infinite, we remain forever separate, Saki. We cannot unite. We become like Zeno's paradox.
No. but in astrophysics or quantum mechanics that, you can keep splitting, but you ultimately at the same time you're connected, you know.
Well, was that like Cain and Abel, or
no, I don't have, you're better at the parables,
or like Abraham and Isaac. That's my favorite. It's always
Abraham
favorite.
And Isaac.
Mm-hmm. Did you know that God has not spoken to man since that time?
So Moses was before
after Abraham.
Moses was after Abraham.
That's all bullshit. Moses made all that up.
Oh, he made all that up. Yeah. Okay, so God didn't speak to Moses.
No.
He only spoke to Abraham.
And he got mad at Abraham because Abraham would not kill Isaac. And he says, screw you, I'm going off to fix another galaxy. You guys can fend for yourselves.
True. That's not true.
God, stop Abraham.
Yeah, hey, exactly.
Yeah, that was the right-wing biblical interpretation.
Which burning bush movie did see?
No, man, I stand up for Abraham, the man who said, no, I will not kill my son.
No, he didn't.
Hey, follow the money and power trail.
My story's different.
Yes, it is.
I talked to God, and God told me.
Well, I like your story. But then the prospect of eternal fire and brimstone, you know, can be sort of compelling.
Well, we have to, that's why, and Adam and Eve, when they choose the real world or our world instead of the garden, you got to make it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your immortality is your children and your species.
Right.
Maybe your planet.
Right. Speaking of,
hey, by the way, I got a new. I was thinking about a cultural counter culture to this thing that's happening in Trump land, right? You know, this these splitting identities. Did you see how Betsy DeVos thought that historically black colleges were a great example of school choice? I know what she was saying. You know, she was saying, you know, I think that they should have their own schools.
Right.
You know, and I thought the immigrants should go back. Well, I love the immigrants from Brazil. I wish they'd go back to Brazil. So what about, you know, what is your race? I am all races.
Well, did you hear the report this morning about the last census that other race was the third largest category, and they predict that in the next census that it may lap the other two categories, black and white.
Yeah, but culturally, why couldn't we do a thing that is affirmative about I am, what is your race? I am all races. I'm not actually other. I'm everyone.
I'm everyone.
Because it seems to me that to go forward culturally in this, from this splitted up kind of thing, don't we have to, we have to be both multicultural and internationalist, you know, in a way. We have to learn to be that, don't we?
Yeah. No, I get
fundamentally,
you.
And to affirm it in some way, find ways to affirm it. Not just I am not a racist. I am not a this. I am not a that. I am not, but to find an affirmative humanity that directly speaks to this somehow the splitting things. Of which there are many different kinds, I know. But
no, I agree with you. It's the neurolinguistic approach to, you know, affirm a message rather than repeat the negative one. Yeah, I mean, there have been, you know, people say I'm a human, I'm a part of the human race, or this one love, you know, the Rastas, reggae people talk about one love.
I like all better because it serves variation, which is
races.
Very rich in every human thing. Okay, I never met you go into a store. I defy you to find a single person that if you go into a store that has a lot of variety of choices of things to eat versus one that has two or three, the attraction of variety, a variation in life, I mean is huge, right? I mean it's almost it may be at a layer below, just you know, our thoughts almost, that we enjoy that. That's a source of pleasure, you know, when there is, hey, I can do something different. You know, I don't have to do exactly what you do. I have a thing that embracing that. Because we're not, one in a certain human sense that's abstract, but we are not all the same. Right? I mean, everybody comes from lots of unique places, right? And as well as cultural and national places.
No, but you may be on to something. All races, they say, the anthropologists say you can trace all of us back to single parenthood, you know.
Yeah.
So obviously we started as one construction that differentiated in a lot of different paths.
Right.
But yeah, if you trace us all back, you know, and then the geneticists talk about how, you know, we're 99.9% the same, you know. Yeah. It's like 1% or maybe 3%.
Oh, it's less than 1%.
Less than 1%. 0.1%, 0.3% that, you know, actually differentiates all of us, you know, from the black African to the Swede, you
right,
know.
Right,
can you imagine,
right.
You know, just that little bit of genetic coding.
Thing that got me recently thinking about this was watching that truckload van load of young women from Loyola University Law School get out at the Women's March, you know, and they were all together. There was about 25 of them or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they were all these young women, they're law students. And they, I mean, I if you'd line them all next up next to each other, it just would have been practically every shade of the world, okay? Because they apparently they're recruiting people from all over the world. And a very diverse law school kind of thing that they're doing there. Something that I wasn't aware that Loyola was doing that, but they are. And man, these were all just it was a lot of beautiful women, of course. But they were all just so energetic, man. And they were there was a certain thing about it. It looked like the world we're gonna live in.
Inhabit.
But we have to do. Right. I mean, you can't. Bill Gates said this. I mean, of all the people, I mean, who was probably raised by one of the more narrow-minded Seattle families. His mother was a trip, man. He says about, the problem with rednecks in the workforce. Yeah, he actually addressed it just like that. He says, we can't do that. You know, we got to work with people all over the world. Okay? Everybody's going to learn to work together. If you have a little language problem, you got to find ways, texting, do whatever, you got to find ways to communicate. You got to way to get understand. You have to understand what the other person is saying. Everybody has that obligation.
Right.
And we just can't do this business of I'm not going to work with so-and-so, or I'm not, I would never work in a subordinate position with so-and-so, a woman or an Indian woman or a black woman or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And so we can't do it. And it says, and if, so you just ran on a list of things. If it happens, you're gone. And we just cannot do it. That reflects the kind of workforce that he wants to recruit, right? He wants people, that are computer engineers and software people from every place in the world. He wants to sell stuff everywhere in the world, and he wants to build facilities everywhere in the world. So,
right.
Sorry.
Right.
But, you still have pocket places where that's not true. I saw did you see the picture of the guy that shot that Indian couple in Kansas?
Yes, I saw it. Yeah. Yeah.
If our friend Howard.
And he thought they were Arabs or Iranians.
Yeah. I mean, that's like if our buddy up on Rattlesnake Corner there was drinking more, he'd look like that too.
Who was that?
You know who I'm talking about. He calls it, he calls his little house up there Rattlesnake Ridge. Claims it was historically named that. He would know. So, want me to play a little tune? Come back here. When Renata's calling in.
I'm gonna email her right now and tell her feel free to call in anytime. Renata Poor of the West Virginia for Affordable Health Care. We'll be calling in momentarily to update us on what the opposition is planning to do to trash our health care, and also about a planned town hall meeting in West Virginia in April, so folks can come out and express their opinion.
Okay, here we're gonna do something different here. I'll play something old and in the way. Back. To the Are You Crazy show here on the Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio. And we're going to do some public service announcements here. They've been requested to announce out. Zaki, what you got?
Yes, tonight from 5:30 to 8 at the Town Run Brewery here in Shepherdstown is March 1st, March Forward, a gathering of all progressive, or mostly all the progressive organizations in the Eastern Panhandle, old and new that have sprung up. So it should be an exciting night. I understand they have a young, exciting speaker beginning. I think she's going to start speaking around 6:30. So come on out, 5:30 to 8.
This is Misha Poor, right?
Excuse me?
I think it's Misha Poor.
Is it?
Yes. I think she's coming. Yeah, right. That's
okay.
What I think I heard. Yeah.
You know her?
Oh, yeah. She was a West Virginia House of Delegates from Charleston.
Okay.
And just a marvelous. And she's very effective, too. I think she ran for Congress in the primary against Nick Casey.
Okay.
And she lost, but she put on a pretty good campaign. African American woman, very from Charleston, and she's now working in Washington, I believe, for, I forget the name of the outfit she's working for. But she was on maybe 2 weeks ago. We had her on.
Oh, nice.
Because she's a great, and by the way, she's a perfect person for a rally. You know, rouse up a couple of some progressives that show up. Like she'll do a great job.
I'm glad, that'll be good.
Yeah, she's very, and she was, she had the right approach in the legislature too, man. She just started introducing bills and getting people to sign on. She was very engaging with everyone. Yeah, she did a good. I was sorry she had to give up her spot in the House. You know, when she ran for Congress, and you know, she ran a good campaign, and she ran she didn't fall apart a bit. Okay, I mean, she didn't have as much money as Nick Casey. Nick Casey's not a bad guy. He sure would have been a better congressman than Alex Mooney, which is who we ended up with. But in any event, she got profiled by nationally because she could go places. Yeah, really. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward. I'll be there with a couple other members of the NAACP.
Do we have to bring our own table, or are they?
Yes. Yeah, you need to bring your own table if you want to set up a table.
Yeah.
I'll be there representing the Berkeley County NAACP along with a couple other members. So Kat Webster, for instance.
Sure, I know her. Yeah.
You know Kat? And yeah. Christina Lundberg, Human Relations Commission.
Right, right.
So we're excited. And there's also, we're going to be advertising the gathering on, Peace and Unity Gathering on Saturday in Martinsburg. It's only an hour, 11 to noon. We're asking folks to show up and show your support for your neighbors who are feeling at risk and under attack in the area in this present climate. Bring your stars and stripes, your peace flags, your rainbow flags, your unity banners, Black Lives Matter, coexist, anything to express how you believe in inclusiveness and that hate has no home here.
All right, I got some other events here. There's going to be a public vigils in support of Muslims and other marginalized groups scheduled for Saturday, March 4th, also in Martinsburg and Hagerstown. Oh, well, this refers to your thing.
Martinsburg and Hagerstown,
the Unity
exactly.
Peace, yeah, uh-huh. So both places, right?
So choose your county.
And the Hagerstown Interfaith Candle Vigil for Unity and Peace is going to be from 6 to 8 p.m. at the First Christian Church, right near where we were last night on Potomac Avenue in Hagerstown, Stuart.
Hagerstown is quite a little pocket of diversity and inclusiveness and positivity.
Well, yeah.
That's where Fanny lives.
It's where Fanny lives, right? And Eric Schwartz and Margaret. Yeah.
All right.
A lot of good people up that way.
And I believe that Margaret, Gail's wife, sent me. Oh, this is a different. Okay. All right. This is another 6-week interfaith dialogue from Hagerstown exploring what it means to show hospitality to one another as neighbors. And it's sponsored by the Interfaith Coalition of Washington County and coordinated by Reverend Ed Poling. He's been doing this kind of work for quite a while. Hosted by the Otterbein United Methodist Church, 108 East Franklin Street, Hagerstown. And it's going to take place Wednesdays from 7 to 9 p.m. On March 8th, they're going to have a Christian perspective. On the 15th, a Muslim perspective. On the 29th, a Jewish perspective. And then into April, they're going to have presentations on the Hindu perspective, the Buddhist perspective, African-American, Latino American, Korean American perspectives, all, you know, going to have a series of presentations anyway. So that's going to be an interesting thing. That's Hagerstown. All right, what else we got? People send me stuff here. Is there anything really big going on here? Oh, I didn't get to see what happened yesterday at the County Commission. There was a special meeting, I'm told, and the subject matter is the ambulance fee. Now, we passed an ambulance fee some time ago in response to, one of the varying responses to the decline in revenue from basically the racetrack and gambling revenues that everybody knew about was going to happen. And they passed a something to make sure they could keep on to the EMS and ambulance fee, ambulance services, and make them cheap enough so that an ordinary person could afford it.
Okay.
So the now what's happened is that the right wingers that have taken over the county commission have proposed to abolish the ambulance fee and absorb the cost into the general revenue, of which there is not enough.
Hmm.
Okay, so the only way you'll maintain current ambulance services is that the you're going to have to shut down the libraries or something, okay? Or start going after the there's some things in the budget that support the school system as well. There's two different budgets, right? The school budget and the regular county commission budget. But
okay.
In any event, so of all people, Jane Tabb, a Republican, but on the county commission actually more than once in the past decade. Her family is one of the oldest families in Jefferson County, a farming family. She sends out a notice saying that the right-wing takeover of the county commission, this is her talking,
okay,
is proposing a thing that will actually mean that if you're poor, you don't get an ambulance.
Whoa. Okay.
Unless you want to pay $1,000 for the ride.
Right, yeah. I've been hit with one of those fees, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I thought, so she was calling for everybody to get involved, and I thought, wow. Mm-hmm. Now, there you go, see?
Interesting.
Little split in the...
Yeah.
In the ranks there. Yeah. And it's also true, for example, I mean...
Is that an example...
That's the last of Republican moderates, I suppose. Yeah.
Okay. So is that an example of when the extremists push it so far, you have reasonable folks that, you know, feel compelled to speak up?
Yeah. I mean, I think... You know, well, the Tabb family doesn't know anybody, anything. I mean, come on. They're not going to...
Right.
They feel like they were, you know...
But they're probably hobnob with these folks, right?
Well, you got some people. I mean, they're not going to hobnob with Caleb Wayne Hudson, a C student here at Shepherd, who you know, managed to get a front man for these fools.
Hmm.
You know, you're not going to have any discussion with him that makes any sense. I heard he can't even spell when he publishes stuff in his public letters.
Whoa!
I mean.
Spell check.
He was in my class for about 2 days.
Really?
Yeah.
So he's on the county commission?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
He beat Walt in the primary. The Liberty Caucus put him on there, and they got him to run. He didn't show up at any debate, but they really, the third-party things really pulled it out for him, and he beat Walt in the primary. And then he basically was, you know, Trump killed everybody in the general election.
Yeah, right. Gosh.
So there he is. He's sitting there. And they got another guy over there that's about as bad.
Hmm.
And then the third guy, Peter somebody, he's supposed to be not... But he's, I don't know. He has no qualifications for local government. He's an ex-general. That's all he has, you know, going for him or something. He's an ex-something in the military.
Wow.
Probably a murderer. I shouldn't say that. I don't know that. That was an unfounded accusation, Peter. I was speaking of murderer ballads. Songs about murders. Anyway, that's what's going on.
Gotcha.
It's so I don't know, the ambulance services. I wish we had one of those, you know, really great Bolshevik type of organizations where every time someone died, we can go have enough links and network, go gather the corpse and just dump it on this guy's front lawn. Ambulance service.
No, it's true, you know, but it is true. It is an issue. I've had this that normally your insurance company, your insurance policy does not cover ambulance services, and you can get hit with, you know, a few years ago it was $1,000. I have no idea what it is now. It could be several thousand dollars that they're going to come after you for when you had to rush, you know, a loved one to the hospital.
Right.
So the idea was just to add on $5.
They promised they got in, they're supposed to cut taxes. They didn't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
None of them know what they're talking about. They don't know. I mean, they came in, they have no idea. They've never governed anything. They don't have the slightest idea what the county budget does.
Right.
not really. I mean, they obviously talk to people who give them opinions, but that's it, you know. And so they come in, and now they're gonna. Now they made a campaign promise. They're gonna claiming that the ambulance fee was just another, you know, tax and spend thing. You know, there was plenty of money to pay for the ambulances. They didn't have to do that. Well, there isn't.
Right.
Money.
Right. And no public forum to.
Oh, and so at the same moment they come there. So thank God for Pete Doherty, okay, our local sheriff, who chose this moment to go to them and say, they ask him, what do you want to talk about? He wanted to talk about his budget proposal, which, you know, since someone's cousin's from Granada, since Harper's Ferry is losing all this money and Bolivar can't pay it either, county's being asked to take up all the security. Good morning. This is Epic Radio. Who's calling?
Hi, this is Renata Poor calling.
Good morning, Renata. This is Zaki. How are you?
Good morning, Zaki. I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Really pleased that you called in this morning. I doubt there's anyone listening that doesn't know you, but why don't you give us a little brief bio of yourself?
Been around working in health policy since probably 1980 in a variety of positions, and most recently for the last decade I've been with West Virginians for Affordable Healthcare, which is a nonprofit group to promote quality affordable healthcare for all West Virginians, and we are the consumer voice for healthcare in West Virginia. We don't represent any particular interest group. We try to represent what consumers are thinking and wanting.
Well, you know, I've been telling listeners this morning that you're putting together a town hall, a healthcare town hall, to be held in Martinsburg in April. So we definitely want to remind people about that as soon as you have the date for it. But my thought in asking you to call this morning, Renata, was just to have you to weigh in some thoughts about the current discussion about healthcare, particularly healthcare in West Virginia, and anything that you may have heard last night that gave you pause, gave you concern about what the opposition is planning. What I'll call they're my opposition. I'm a public health centered physician, so I consider anyone who's planning to disenfranchise any of the community of healthcare as my opposition, but maybe not your opposition. But your thoughts on what's going on in the press? And
well, I listened very carefully to what the president had to say last night, and he said nothing new. Ever since the Republicans became a majority in Congress and they had the president with them, they have put out plans to repeal and eventually replace the Affordable Care Act, some people call it Obamacare, with legislation that would, our analysis is, would basically cause millions of Americans and thousands of West Virginians to lose health coverage. It would shift the cost of health care from the federal government to the states and to consumers. We think it's a huge step backward, and the president last night reiterated these kinds of policies. So we are in West Virginia, we are especially concerned about the proposal to turn Medicaid, which is our biggest healthcare program in West Virginia. It insures 600,000, one in three West Virginians. The proposal from the Republican majority is to turn Medicaid from its current financing structure to a block grant, which would cause West Virginia to lose millions of dollars. On our analysis is just they would eliminate the higher match rate for the expansion, and that would cost West Virginia $160 million a year. In other words, the governor would have to come up with an extra $160 million state dollars for Medicaid, which it is probably impossible to do. And you know, the best option the governor has is to eliminate the Medicaid expansion entirely. So that's what we are concerned about, and we have been talking with Senator Manchin and Senator Capito, less so with Representative Mooney, but because I think that the big action is going to be in the Senate. And so we've been trying to persuade Senators Capito and Manchin not to vote for anything that would eliminate our current arrangement, financial arrangement on Medicaid. It would just be devastating for West Virginia.
Does that concern them? Devastation for West Virginians? Just a question I have. Does it, John? I wonder sometimes.
I'm sorry, were you asking?
When you talk to them, I mean, do they express concern for all these people that are going to lose health care? Or do they act like there's more important problems?
No. They're very concerned, and they are listening. And actually, I was just reading an article in Politico this morning, where Senator Capito is quoted as saying she's very concerned about any proposals that would cause any West Virginian to lose coverage. And Senator McConnell is calling the Republicans together this morning or today to talk about whether they can be together around this, because there's quite a bit of dissension within the Senate among various factions about this proposal. And she is quoted as saying she's going to ask questions about whether people will lose coverage. So I think she's very concerned. We've met with Senator Manchin a number of times and have expressed our concerns about the block grant, and he is also concerned. But he hasn't promised us that he would not vote for a block grant.
Oh, really?
We still have a lot of work to do with Senator Manchin. It would just be a devastating thing. So both senators need to be contacted and told.
Okay.
Don't do this to West Virginia.
Right.
Anytime you take that kind of federal money away from West Virginia, it's going to cause people.
There's no way we have. Yeah, we have no way to make it up, right? Really.
We don't really. It's that serious, Zaki, and you're a doctor. You know that when people don't have health insurance coverage, they don't seek care. They have an emergency, and it's often too late. So.
And it costs so much more because, you know, they wait until that it's so bad that they have to go to the emergency room, and then, you know, the treatment is more extensive, the costs are higher. Yeah, it never makes sense on any level. But, you know, Renata, there's a lot of interest and passion in this area about the healthcare. You know, I went to the mobile town hall for Capito in Ranson in a senior center, and over 30 people showed up. And so I'm to those people, give them the talking points that they need to have about against this idea of the block grant. That you hear on the news that Ryan and the Republicans are pushing for.
I'll give you a few talking points.
Okay. Because these are people that are actually showing up at the local offices, calling daily. They're inundating Capito and Manchin, and to some extent Mooney as well. I took one of Mooney's aides in his office, a very pleasant German-born gentleman, who was, you know, feeding me back misinformation. And I did write Alex Mooney a letter and told him that, you know, this was a very pleasant gentleman, but he needed to stop letting his aides give callers to the office misinformation.
What was the misinformation?
Well, it's harder to get health care under the ACA than it had been before.
That's just such a lot.
Yeah, right.
Right.
You know, West Virginia, our uninsurance rate for people age 18 to 64 used to be about 20%. Well, it's about 8% now. So
yeah,
more than 200,000 West Virginians have gained coverage since the ACA. Now, what the gentleman is talking about is that the ACA does a lot to give low and moderate income people coverage. But middle-income people who don't qualify for Medicaid or for any financial assistance in the marketplace, they are the people who are unhappy with the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
That needs to be fixed because health insurance is just way, 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 way too expensive for most people who aren't wealthy to afford it or who don't have employer-based coverage.
Why would any politician... Why would any politician who ran for office against Obamacare spend any time fixing it?
Well, that's what the people are asking them to do.
Yeah.
The people all across this country are saying, do not repeal without fixing it.
Right.
Don't but fix it. That is what the majority of Americans want. And if they're not listening to that, they're not listening to their constituents.
Yes.
So it does fixing. And they should do that. But to cause millions of people to lose their health insurance coverage?
So let me talk about that. Let's assume for a minute that, Renata, that happens at some level. Either maybe not, as it doesn't have to be in completely catastrophic. I mean, it can be, you know, medium catastrophic. I mean, for example, some counties in West Virginia are wealthier than others. And I assume that would mean that, maybe I'm wrong, that some counties could absorb that damage more than others. Do you have any sense of, as we slide down the slope here, that I mean, if you're living in places and you see the thing falling apart, what steps locally, are there any that make sense to you? Are we just looking at a chasm here or a...
You know, it's not only individuals that will be affected by this. It's also your health care infrastructure. So a county
right.
like Jefferson County, that's pretty well-to-do, I'm assuming, they could take county money and replace some of the federal money by giving money directly to hospitals,
right.
to community health centers,
right.
you know, and to support your local health care infrastructure. That is what... would probably happen.
I
don't know how your county commissioners feel about that.
Well, we just elected three fools to the county commission, excuse my English, but so I don't think they're going to be doing anything until they're run out of there, but they seem to be, they're trying to, for example, right now they're trying to cut the ambulance fee, which, you know, since none of them had the slightest idea what the Jefferson County budget looked like after the racetrack has been reducing its contributions for 4 years in a row now. They said, oh, there'll be no problem. There's plenty of money to pay for without having an ambulance fee. Well, it turns out there's not. Well, if they cancel the ambulance fee, poor people are going to have to pay. They're not going to get a ride to the hospital.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, but it's just so we have it's not good. I mean, Trump had a big impact in this county. I'd say he was decisive in about four of the elections. I mean, in other words, they were so close. In some cases, that it was only the Trump wave that made the difference, you know. So, but that was true of quite a few. And so we have a serious problem here. Actually, I don't know. I'm not quite sure. Let me tell you this: the older Republican that's on the county commission, Jane Tabb, one of the oldest farming families in Jefferson County, she sends out the letter saying that there's a crackpot plan. You know, basically being launched here to kill ambulance services for anybody that hadn't got $1,000 for the ride. And that wasn't sent out by the remaining Democrat. It's very interesting, right? So I just, this thing that there's these crackpot people that want to, don't care if it burns down public services. They don't care. And they act like they have a mandate to not care. That's so scary to me.
Sometimes things have to fall apart before.
Yes. Thank you.
If I could say one more thing.
Go ahead.
More things. I don't want to just focus on Medicaid and the 600,000 people on Medicaid, but there are also hundreds of thousands of people in West Virginia who have a pre-existing condition. And that means if they want to buy a policy in the individual marketplace, before Obamacare, before the Affordable Care Act, they could not buy a policy at any price, or they could buy a policy, but it wouldn't cover whatever their pre-existing condition was. So this is also, you know, one of the important pieces of Obamacare. If they pull that piece out of that, it will hurt. You know, I think it's like 800,000 West Virginians have pre-existing conditions, diabetes, high blood pressure. Before Obamacare, pregnancy was considered a pre-existing condition, and many insurance policies wouldn't cover maternity care, or they charge women a whole lot more than they charge men.
Right.
All these are intricately bound up in Obamacare, and they could be gone if the Republicans have their way. People who are getting subsidies on the health marketplace, and that is more than 35,000 West Virginians, are getting a policy, health policy, through the marketplace, and about 86% are getting a subsidy. So those subsidies would change dramatically. So there are just so many.
Right. What about, let me ask one more question.
Go ahead. Seniors, for example, have gotten help with their pharmaceuticals, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's going to be gone. Will they have to go back and pay once they fall into what's called the donut hole? Once they, I don't know if you know what that
is. Yes, I do, yeah. You know, in other words, you get paid for your medications up to a certain level, then you get nothing, and then it goes up a bigger level, and then you get covered again.
Yes, and Obamacare has began to close that donut hole, and West Virginians seniors have saved millions of dollars. I forget the exact number, but it's millions of dollars that they
right.
have saved. So there are just so many aspects to this.
You mentioned the parts that need to be fixed of Affordable Care Act. For example, some of the exchanges, right, and the people competing in that. Do you have a theory yourself of what the fix would be, or the one that you think would be the best that would work?
So here's another flaw in the Republicans' thinking. They think they can lower insurance costs by creating greater competition among insurance companies, or selling insurance across state lines. The president mentioned that. I don't think that's how you're going to hold down insurance costs. The reason insurance costs are high is not about competition. It's about the high cost of medical care and prescription drugs. And, for example, the increasing costs in Medicaid and PEIA this past year have all been driven by the cost of prescription drugs.
Really?
And the Congress should address our insanely high cost of prescription drugs, medical costs. And they should also, and the other thing, Obamacare has created lots of programs to make medical care more efficient. And some of these, I don't know if they're going to work or not, they're experiments. But, you know, they should be given a chance to work. That is the real cause of high insurance rates, is the medical care. It's not about competition among insurance companies. So I think the Republicans will want, and what the young man at Senator Capito's or Representative Mooney's office was saying, is that if you have more insurance policies, then people have greater choice of policy, but some of those choices they have are really not very good, and I don't think that average person doesn't even understand the difference between a quality insurance policy and a pretty poor insurance policy.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So that's what needs to be fixed. And the financial assistance in the marketplace does need to increase for middle income people. Like right now, if above 250% of the federal poverty level, which amounts to about $30,000 for one person or $40,000 for a family of two. Above that level, the subsidies are very, very small or non-existent. And people above that level, they need some relief too. If you're making your family of two and you're making $40,000 a year and you have to pay $1,000 for your insurance policy,
that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Unaffordable. It is people who need help.
Well, it's way above what they used to say, the 5 or 10 was it a 15% guideline they were going to try to, remember there was an original attempt to keep the out-of-pocket cost at 15%, but
9.5%
or 9.5, okay, like oh, okay, right.
You should pay out of your income for health insurance.
But that hasn't actually worked out in some cases, right? That's
pardon?
That's not worked out that well, has it?
No, I guess some, no, people are paying more than that.
Right, so.
Especially when you consider the high deductibles. You know, now, I'm not speaking for my organization here or anything, but the Medicare for All would be the most efficient way to fix this problem.
Right.
Because Medicare, everybody pays something, but it's affordable what they pay. And I think that would be a great solution.
And to allow Medicare for All to negotiate prices, right, with the pharmaceuticals.
Yeah. Well, that's something that should happen. Congress needs to do something to drive down the cost of prescription drugs.
You know, you're reminding me of that Time expose a few years ago called Bitter Pill. Do you remember that in Time magazine?
Uh-huh.
It was a really good article. A journalist had done a lot of research into the varying costs of medications and treatments, and it was just outrageous how much they were charging for things. You know, we've all heard the cliche, you know, $2 for an aspirin, but you know, like these cancer treatment centers where they get a syringe of something for $1,000, and then they charge the patient $6,000 for it. It's, you know, it's just criminal.
Well, you know, other countries have come up with better solutions. They have lower costs. They have better care. And why in 2017, instead of moving forward and improving upon Obamacare, we're getting ready to go backwards.
Yeah. You know, 60 Minutes did a really good story. I forget the European pharmaceutical company, and they had the CEO on there comparing the prices they charge for things compared to American pharmaceuticals.
Hold on a second.
We're getting a call.
Mike, is that you on the phone?
It is.
Yeah, hold on. Just hold on a second, okay? Go ahead.
And it was just stunning to hear the CEO of that pharmaceutical company tell the 60 Minutes journalist that, you know, we make enough money. We don't need to check up, you know, our prices 500%. You know, if we get 100% profit, you know, we have plenty of money to pay our employees and so forth. So it's almost a mindset, Renata, about greed, this greediness in the industry.
How do you get rid of greed? I mean, that sounds like one of the cardinal sins that we have to purge. How do we do it? We just have to tax it, man.
Did we lose Renata? Renata, are you there?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm pondering how we get rid of greed.
I don't know. Hey, Mike, Mike Diesel's called in. Mike, do you have a question or comment?
No, I just wanted to make a, you know, good morning, everyone, Renata, Zaki, John. I just want to make a comment. You know, my brother is actually, that's who he is Cancer Treatment Centers of America. And the ongoing cost of medication per month, and he's you know, just got back again. He's flying back from Chicago right now as we speak. And got another PET scan saying no disease found. Now, he was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer and liver cancer almost 5 years ago. And he has fought that. But one of the things he said to me is, you know, because of the subsidies, if they cancel this, he's probably going to die. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He will have a very, very difficult time paying for his health care. I think Renata hit onto something that I think they strongly underestimate how effective the entire program has been. Now, we can argue about, you know, and my younger brother, Renata, to your credit, is going through the same, you know, he's a middle income guy that boy, oh boy, the cost is ridiculous in Virginia. It's very expensive for him to pay for his insurance through the ACA for himself, his wife, and his two children.
Right.
So
yeah.
You have a dueling dynamic here. And my younger brother, thank goodness, is smart enough and enlightened enough to know, hey, we need to fix this.
Right. Okay, Mike, let me get Renata. We've got about three more minutes here. Renata, maybe you want to riff on Mike there and close out a little bit.
Well, I'm sorry about your brother, Mike.
Thank you.
And I do want to emphasize, and, you know, sometimes people will say I'm hysterical or it's just not true. But over these past several years, I have listened to so many stories of people who have been saved, whose lives have literally been saved by Obamacare. And I have also heard stories of lives who were lost because they didn't get timely care, because they got sick before Obamacare went into effect. I have been told by medical examiners that they used to see a lot of dead people, I guess that's who gets to the medical examiner, who died of a heart attack on the way to the hospital or the emergency room before Obamacare. And he said, I don't know why they didn't seek medical care to address their condition, but they died on the way to the hospital. He said, since Obamacare, I hardly ever see a dead person who died on the way to the hospital.
Wow.
You know, of course, are still dying from heart attacks.
Sure.
But they're not in an emergency like
so that's a pretty powerful testimony.
Wow.
That's testimony. Really, I'm trying to be public with it, but he's not ready to do that, I guess. So.
All right. Well, listen, Renata. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, we need to. We probably need to do studies with all medical examiners across the country to see what they have to say about that issue.
Renata Zaki, please call us back when you have the healthcare town hall meeting scheduled and firm, so we can tell our listeners.
Towards the end of April. We're scheduling them all around the state, and we are asking our congressional representatives to come and talk to the people of West Virginia about what the plans are. And, you know, we do appreciate Senator Capito is in a difficult position, but she really needs to know that she should not vote to undo this legislation.
And apparently Joe needs more messages, too.
And Joe needs that message.
Okay, well, I know the Quakers are going to be having their spring lobbying weekend in 2 weeks, I guess, that's going to focus entirely on health care. And we're going to have a little dinner party on Saturday, raise some money for a scholarship to that. And so we're going to pass that message along as hopefully they'll be headed over to both Senator Manchin and Senator Capito's office, and we can have an impact. I hope that happens. All right. Well, thank you so much for calling. All right. And all right.
Thank you, Renata. Take care.
Take care. All right. Mike, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I just wanted to say how nice it was to hear you guys again. And I had a few minutes here, and thank you so much for having me on the air. I miss
anytime, buddy. Anytime.
I miss you guys. I miss being there. But you know, we into each life, some rain must fall.
Right at and the wind did rise, and the rain did fall, and the river a shadowy wave, and Anna Lee never saw danger's dark call, and was swept in a watery grave, just like Mike Diesel. There you go. All right,
yeah, it's all good. You know, we're hustling and working, and my wife is down in D.C. this morning covering a conference, so that's actually probably good news.
Whereas we are actually having a conference.
Yes. I did. I was up very, very late last night. I was out doing some stand-up, and I was up very late. And I did, if you get a chance, you guys, it's one of the funnier things I've seen on television in a long time, one of the funnier skits. If you get a chance, watch Seth Meyers.
Okay.
He does the later show on NBC.
Yeah.
After Fallon. And he has a bit that is just, jokes he can't get away with. So he has an African-American female writer on one side of him, and he has a lesbian on the other side of him, and he does the setup, and they do the punchline.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, right. so he can kind of get away with it, sort
yeah.
of.
Right.
And then they tell him, they're in a situation where, why don't you go ahead and do the next punchline? And he's like, okay, sure. Are you guys sure? Is it okay? And then he does it, and it's just a god-awful.
It doesn't work at all.
Yeah, they start yelling at him. But there's a couple of bits with regards to the current administration and what's going on that are really funny.
All right. We need all the humor we can get.
I did want to say one thing.
Go ahead.
Really quickly. Chez Pazienza, you were gone too soon. And I'm sorry that you became a victim of the opioid epidemic that is
what's his name?
In our country.
What's his name?
Chez Pazienza. He wrote for the Daily Banter. He was on a podcast called The Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska.
Yeah.
Just a really good writer, solid writer, funny. But as in keeping with a lot of things that are going on around the country, and I'm sure Zaki has probably heard this more than you and I, John, I don't know, maybe he hasn't, but there's so much depression, frustration, and anger out there.
Sleeplessness.
And people aren't getting enough sleep, they're not eating right. We're in a real difficult situation.
All right, well, last night I want to say, signing off here from the... Are You Crazy Show? That's
you,
okay, man. Just take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next. And what came next last night after I had fried pickles, I can't talk about. So we'll be back tomorrow with... we won't be back tomorrow. I'm going to do a bunch of stuff tomorrow. So,
No more fried pickles, John.
No more fried pickles. But Friday will be a big day here with the Paris on the Potomac show and a labor beat. So... stay tuned. And by the way, later today, we got Resistance Radio with Stuart Acuff coming up in about an hour. And then after that, I'm going to play food programming all day.
Excellent.
Food programming.
That's true.
You can find out how to find the white truffle. You've heard about the white buffalo? Try hunting for the white truffle. Okay. Well, talk to you later, Mike. Take it easy, man.
Okay, take care, guys. Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Da, 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 da. Let me turn this. Let's turn on some music here.
Fucking Van Jones.
Watch out, man. Run the air.
Okay, John, I'll see you tonight at the Town Run Brewery, 5:30 to 8.
I'll be there.
And on Saturday in Martinsburg, and King Streets at 11 to noon.
Okay, and sounds good.
And take care.
Premium accommodations. Okay.